Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Here on Driven to Business, we celebrate the entrepreneurial spirit. We celebrate our successes. We learn from our failures. And we try to do it all in an entertaining way that will be useful to you as you run your career and or your business. You may not know this. Personal financial site NerdWallet says that Atlanta is one of the best places in the United States. In fact, listed as number one of the best places in the United States to start a business. Personal NerdWallet is actually out of Seattle, Washington. So they wrote this article sort of bemoaning the fact that Atlanta topped Seattle, but those of us that live here knew that anyway. Although with the rain we've had recently, we may feel like we're in Seattle, actually. You know, whether you're running a business, whether you're working for one, or whether you're trying to find a job, how you manage your career is very important. If you're managing a business, the way you're going to manage that business has a lot to do with how you manage your personal career. Our special guest today is Michael Bryant with LED Consulting. You can find Michael's website at ledconsulting.net. And Michael is a business and career coach. Mike, welcome. Michael, welcome to Driven to Business.
Eddie, I appreciate you having me on today. It's a great honor.
Well, thank you. Michael, tell us about LED Consulting.
Well, LED Consulting was created and founded on a commitment to personal and organizational growth. And we do that through seminars, workshops, and executive coaching engagements. LED stands for Leadership and Executive Development. That's basically where I got the initials for it. And we're focused on helping businesses, business owners, leaders inside organizations to grow and get better at what they do.
Michael, leadership is always an interesting topic to me. I read a blog that you wrote recently about the three levels of confidence, and I've got particular comments about one of them, but tell our audience about your blog. What are those three levels of confidence?
Well, the three levels of confidence was a great lesson for me. I just recently started traveling again in my business, and was busy on my phone, not paying attention as I worked my way through the security line and got on the tram at the Atlanta International Airport, and wasn't paying any attention to what I was doing, and realized that I had almost missed my concourse. And Eddie, as you well know, that's a huge airport, and would not be fun to miss your concourse out there.
It's a long ways back to it.
Absolutely. So as I started thinking about that, I realized that just a few years ago when I restarted traveling and visiting my clients, that originally going through post 9/11 security and all those hoops that you have to jump through these days, when I first started that, I was very uncomfortable, I was very insecure, and I was very inexperienced. So my levels of confidence when I first started that experience were very low, and that's where I identified level one was inexperienced and insecure. And you and I have all been there, whether it's a new job, that first date, whether you've just gotten a promotion and moved to a new department or even a new area. When you come into those environments, you don't know the landscape, you're not really sure how to operate, and so your experience level is very low, and you're very insecure as what to do, how to do it. I mean, you know, a new job, you don't even know where the bathroom is. So that level one confidence is very low. Well, level two, you've been around a while, you're starting to learn, you're getting less uncomfortable, you're still uncomfortable, and you're still learning, so your senses are still heightened, and you're paying attention to what's going on, and you still have those antennas raised. So you're still seeking to be better, you're still asking questions, and those type of things. And then level three confidence is you become knowledgeable, and you become too confident. And those are great sweet spots, but they can also have a lot of blind spots.
Michael, I'm especially interested and intrigued by the too confident level. I think we've all been there. One of my favorite authors is Malcolm Gladwell. I heard him say at a leadership seminar that while incompetent leaders annoyed him, that overconfident leaders scared him. And I think you're sort of making the same point, are you?
Absolutely. When you become too confident, you can lose focus. You stop asking for input from others, whether it's team members, peers, mentors, or even those that you report to. And you can become sloppy in your execution, maybe too arrogant in your decision-making, and you stop getting outside information, and you start relying only on yourself because you believe you have all the answers. And that is destructive in a team environment. We are so much smarter with others than we are by ourselves. So that too confident can be very, very dangerous for a leader in today's environment, especially.
I couldn't agree more with that. I think part of it is if you're arrogant or too confident or overconfident, whichever term you wish to use, you have, in a sense, stopped learning. And consequently, you're not paying attention to the environment around you. And those are the kind of people where the environment can change and they don't see it. Things change in their organization and they don't see it. They have alienated people in their organization. And they don't see it because they're not listening to anyone. They're not learning anything. I don't know if you ever read Jim Collins, author of Good to Great.
Absolutely.
And he's one of my favorite authors. And one of his books I actually like better than Good to Great is How the Mighty Fall. And he says in there that the first step to failure is hubris or arrogance born of success. The very idea that our success can actually be the roots of our failure is an interesting one, isn't it?
Absolutely. One of the things that in the leadership development field that we understand is that our greatest strengths also become our greatest blind spots. And when you become overconfident like that, and as you said, stop investing in ourselves or stop learning ourselves, that becomes very dangerous because as we pour into others and as we lead others and we're not pouring back into our own well, that well runs dry. And before long, we can't lead our people forward because we haven't been taking ourselves forward.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I've always, after founding our business, and when I founded our business back here in the late 80s, I fit your first level there of being insecure. I was scared to death, to be quite frank about it.
Right.
And so scared that I probably overprepared for everything that I had to do to the point of absurdity, really. But there does come a point when you have to fight against when it becomes a routine, and suddenly you're not preparing as you should. You're not paying attention. You're not doing your homework, and those can be the roots of failure. You know, Michael, I think in the Bible it talks about that pride goes before a fall, and I really think that although Collins didn't say that specifically, that's really what I think he's putting out in his book there. You know, his writings are not just based on his ideas. His writing, as you probably know this, his writings are based on some very careful research. He's pretty much different. He's hard to argue with in his findings, and in Good to Great, probably his most famous book, he talked about the fact that when he was looking to see what was the common factor, the common personality trait among great leaders who took their companies from good to great, it was something he was surprised. It was humility, and he was surprised by that. And I think we all, that's sort of counterintuitive in a way, isn't it, to us in terms of leadership?
Yeah. Yes, normally our impression of great and dynamic leaders are these very outgoing, ego-driven individuals that are very charismatic and those type things. But as you said, Jim Collins' research, and he has a lot of data to back up, you know, what he has written in Good to Great, and he found that the humble leaders were the ones the great leaders, those level five leaders, were people that weren't looking to take the spotlight. They weren't looking to take credit for success. As a matter of fact, they always deferred compliments and accolades to their people, their team, their organization, and those that they lead. And those are great principles to follow.
You know, they're not just great principles for business. Those are great principles to live by. I always find it interesting and rewarding, actually, to think about the fact that what makes a good leader in a business is the same thing that makes you a good person. And I just find that a fascinating concept, the idea that that we don't have to be these overbearing bullies to get things done in business. That doesn't mean you're not driven. It doesn't mean you're not decisive. It doesn't mean that you're not passionate. It just means you're not a bully.
Right. And one of the great podcasts that I've listened to, or I believe I may have listened to it at a seminar, a conference, was when Andy Stanley talked about what do you do when you're the most powerful person in the room? And I don't know if you've ever heard that speech, but Andy talks about all of us at some time or another as leaders are going to end up in a meeting or at a conference or something where we show up and we are the most powerful person there. And how we act, how we conduct ourselves, and how we lead from that position is critical, and it reveals our character, our integrity, and our motives when that shows up.
I have heard, I don't know if that exact speech, I have heard Andy speak on a number of times about that topic, and I absolutely do agree with that. I heard Jack Welch say not too long ago that that a good leader has to be willing to be the dumbest guy in the room. Now, we have 1 minute left. Do you want to comment on that for a second?
Well, I can do that really well many times. But
I've never had any problem for being that.
Well, I recently heard the CEO or read the CEO of Intuit say that great leaders are not known for the answers they give, but the questions that they ask.
That is a great point. You are listening to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Michael Brown. We are streaming live, by the way, on 1190.com, and a podcast of today's program will be on eddiemayfield.com following this program. We'll be back in a few moments. You're on Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Michael Bryant with LED Consulting. That's at LED Consulting.net. Michael, we were talking before the break about the problems with being too confident of a leader. To change topics just a bit here, you've also written that doing things mentally challenging, like starting piano lessons, can improve the brain function. I was talking to my wife about that. I've been playing guitar a long time, and I recently began taking some lessons, learning a little bit about jazz guitar. And she tells me it's driving her crazy, so I'm not sure that's working out for her part of it. But, you know, the fact is we do need to challenge ourselves. And I think for some of us, as we get older, and it goes along again with that not being arrogant and always being a learner, that's not a passive thing. We do need to stretch ourselves a bit, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. You pulled that from my blog called Easy Street, and which was a great story as I was driving through Nashville, Tennessee on my way to southern Indiana to visit a client. I saw a truck go breezing by me, an older truck, not in the greatest shape in the world, but on the back window he had a bumper sticker that said, "Where the hell is Easy Street?" And so, you know, it sparked me to start thinking about, you know, our impression of what Easy Street looks like and why do we think Easy Street would be good. And so I began researching it and came across this information about how the brain needs to be stretched and exercised to stay healthy and to grow stronger. And so if we don't exercise our brain, just like we don't exercise our muscles, our arms, our legs, our lungs, our heart, all those type pieces of our body, if we don't exercise them, then atrophy can set in, and we know that's not good. So focused not only on the brain, but other things that in nature that show us that stretching. We all try to avoid hard things. We want life easy. We want things to come to us easy. But the truth of the matter is, if we don't strain and stretch, you know, when we exercise and we're sore, the reason our muscles are sore is because we actually broke them down. We tore them so that they could rebuild stronger. So those tough times that you and I experience in life are really exercises in making us better and making us stronger.
I think there's no question that anyone that looks back at their career will say the places where they learned the most and grew the most were probably under times of some stress, some times of a bit of difficulty in trying to learn. Michael, I was lying on the couch exercising my brain watching television the other night. And I was watching a thing, and it was about growing grapes, and it was talking about, I didn't know this, it was about winemaking, and it said that the best grapes, and they use this term, they said the best grapes need to be stressed. And what they meant was that the grapes that produced, I don't drink wine, so I wouldn't know what makes good wine from bad wine. I'm sorry, that's a bit lacking in my education. But according to these experts, grapes that are stressed by growing in a bit poorer soil, perhaps where there's a lot of wind and so forth, where other plants wouldn't do very well, those are the grapes that produce the best wine. And I was thinking, that's a great analogy for life, actually, isn't it?
Absolutely. In the blog, one of the examples I use is for trees to grow strong and stay healthy, they need some of that wind to stretch and stress them as well, and that helps the fibers in the tree grow stronger. I think all of us know about, Shamu the whale that's been in captivity for several years. If you ever notice him, his dorsal fin lays over to the side.
Right.
That is common in whales that are in captivity. You will never see that in a whale that's living wild in the ocean, because the stream, the current, all the factors of swimming underwater keep that dorsal fin strong. And since in captivity they don't have those forces, that dorsal fin becomes weak and just lays over to the side.
You know, put a bit of a practical business type analogy to that. I often heard it said during some of these recent difficult times that a lot of businesses have had to go through, and many businesses have faced, as we both know, in the last several years, some very hard times, some of them extremely hard times. But I've noticed that oftentimes when businesses get in some financial problems, they have to begin getting very efficient and looking very carefully at where their expenditures are and so forth. I'm sometimes struck with the idea that those are the things really they should have been doing when things were going well, because those are good things. Those are not bad things. To run in an efficient manner is not something you should only do when you're about to go under. I mean, that's a good thing to do at all times.
Absolutely. And back to your point that we rarely learn things in the good times.
Right.
It's usually in the bad times when our learning grows. And then when I'm coaching executives who are struggling with delegation, you know, really successful people got where they are today because they were the go-to guy, the get-it-done person
right.
in the organization. And as they grow in the organization and get higher up in the organization, that has to change from them being the go-to person to the get-it-done person. And that means of handing off responsibilities and have people that they are leading take those roles and responsibilities. And so one of the questions I asked them in their career, have you ever been thrown to the wolves in a situation, something that you were totally unprepared for? And they say, oh, yes.
Of course.
Immediately they say, oh, yes. And I said, what happened? Well, I really grew, and I got stronger, and I figured it out, and I made it successful. And I said, well, you're protecting your people from doing that very thing, and therefore you're hindering their growth and their ability to grow in the organization as well.
That's a great point, and I think probably for me and for probably most of our listeners, that they would see the exact same thing in their own careers about that, that there were times when all of us felt like we were just tossed out there having no idea what we were doing. But somehow you get creative and figure it out and grow in the process and get a lot, and not only grow, but build your own, build your confidence that you can in fact do this.
Absolutely.
And it makes you much better. It's very beneficial to your career. You know, some people, I know you teach seminars and coach and so forth. Some people are reticent to attend seminars because they'll say something like they're rarely going to hear anything they didn't already know. Now, that's not necessarily true. I realize that when you go. But my answer to that is, you know, as you mentioned, you go to church. I go to church every Sunday and have for most of my life. But I rarely hear anything new there in a church service. You talk about this in some of your blog. There's a big difference between knowing something and doing something, isn't there?
Absolutely. You know, the great things about seminars, as you said, we rarely pick up anything new. Normally, if I go through a conference or a seminar or something, it's reminders. It's reinforcing something that I knew. Many times, it's something that I knew, but I had stopped practicing. The other thing is if I look for two or three new nuggets that I can walk away with. But one of the things that we stress in our seminars and our conference, our workshops, is we encourage our clients to have follow-up coaching sessions after those seminars so that you take those aha moments during those seminars, and then you, through the coaching, we establish some practices and reinforcement to keep those ideas, those new ideas and those old reminders, and keep them being incorporated into the organization and into their daily leadership style.
Michael, you know, in our company, we attend seminars and so forth as well, and sometimes have other folks come in, and we always do I just call it a debriefing at the end of it. And I always ask them, I tell them, you know, try to bring away just one idea if you can, and then we'll pool those ideas and we'll see. And out of that, we've actually had some pretty successful either marketing campaigns or just business ideas come out of those things that we wouldn't have gotten had we not stretched our brains a bit. Again, maybe not hearing anything we didn't know, but just sort of push out of a comfort zone a bit and stretch ourselves a little bit. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, streaming live on biz1190.com, podcasting on eddiemayfield.com. Stick around. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. As I always say, I may not have the best radio voice, but I have the perfect radio face. And we're here today with our guest, Michael Bryant with LED Consulting. You can find Michael at ledconsulting.net. So go there and check it out. Michael, before the break, we were talking about the difference between knowing and doing. You know, here's a little, I noticed this early on in my career. Back when I was working as a salesman for another company, I would attend a lot of sales training, sales seminars. And a lot of the salespeople did not want to go, but I always jumped at the chance whenever I could to go. What I began noticing there was the people that attended the seminars were usually the top salespeople in the companies they came from. They were the guys going to sales seminars. It were the people that knew how to do it already that wanted to get better at it. And the people that didn't see, that thought they already knew how to do it, but apparently weren't doing it, were not bothering to show up at the seminars. Do you find that true?
Absolutely. In all areas of life, the people that are successful in something want to continue to be better at it. They are motivated. They're driven. They enjoy that piece of whatever it is. We've done several financial seminars at our church, and the people that always show up are the people that are very well schooled at how to manage money and they budget and all those type things, and the people that are struggling financially won't come. So in executive coaching, rarely do I coach an executive that doesn't know what to do. They're just not doing it. And so my role in that executive coaching engagement is to help them identify it, own up to the things that they're not doing, and us develop plans and programs and goals to accomplish those things that they know they should be doing but are not doing.
You know, I go to a doctor my year to check up, and I'll come back, and my wife always says, well, what did he say? And I said, well, he said, eat less and exercise more. She says, well, I tell you that all the time. I said, well, I know, but I wasn't listening, you know. So I already knew it, of course. That probably is the ultimate example of knowing and doing. And I think for me, the hardest part, I climb Stone Mountain here in the Atlanta area just about every morning, and the hardest part of climbing Stone Mountain is walking out the front door to go do it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is the hard part, is to go out the front door. After I'm there, okay, it's fine. I enjoy it, actually, getting up there. Michael, in another blog you have, you talk about banned workplace words. That's an intriguing title. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was quite interesting. One of the things that I get the privilege of doing is working with extremely talented, extremely smart, intelligent executives, and a lot of times I get to work with young, high potentials and future leaders in the organization. And one of those, I was having a coaching session with him, and he said, I have banned four words or phrases in my plan. And that kind of threw up some red flags for me. I was concerned about that, and I said, well, tell me more. He said, I will not allow anyone to say the following. He said, they cannot say can't, they cannot say hope, they cannot say if, and they cannot say used to. And I said, wow, that's interesting. Tell me more. He says, well, if they say can't, what they're really saying is I won't or I don't want to. And obviously that doesn't work in an organization. He's looking for people that are, yes, we can, and they'll figure out a way to do it. The second was hope, and that intrigued me a little bit because we all want hope in the workplace. We all want hope in our families,
right,
in our lives. But he was saying, I don't want them saying, I hope we can, or I hope we meet that deadline.
I've heard people say hope is not a strategy.
Absolutely. It's not. And in today's, especially in our culture, hope really means wish.
Right.
I wish this or I wish that. It's not really a hope. It is a wish. And so he doesn't want people wishing for things. He wants them committed to that because there's not a commitment to accomplishing something if all they're saying is hope. And then the third statement was, if such and such happens, then I can accomplish so-and-so. Or if so-and-so does something, then I can do something. So there's no responsibility, there's no ownership, and there's no accountability when someone's using the word if. And then the last, obviously, is used to, and we know we don't want to use that word because it is, well, we used to do it this way. Instead of they're looking back instead of looking forward. So those are the four workplace words that he banned at his plant. And this is a very successful person that is turning around an old culture into a new forward-looking plant. And he's being very successful at it.
He sounds like it. Michael, you spend a lot of time with various executives and leaders in business. Just in general, what is your take on leadership in American business, just overall?
Well, unfortunately, the American impression of leadership today is quite skewed because it's based on what they see through the media, and that's usually the people that have microphones and cameras in their face 24/7. And obviously, I wouldn't want to be a leader where I've got every word and every action under scrutiny.
Not either, man.
Because we're human. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to say dumb things. And if you've got that 24/7 pressure, our cracks in the armor, our weaknesses, our humanity shows up. And so in today's environment where you have news being shown 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that impression of American leadership gets damaged. Now, the other thing that I am concerned about, though, is that I see a weakening in the moral foundation,
right,
of leadership today. And without moral leadership, there's not going to be any integrity. Without integrity, there's not going to be any trust. Without trust, there will not be a long-term leadership relationship out there.
I think, honestly, that the free enterprise system, and you'll find other political pundits that would say the American system of representative government, we can't exist without in a moral vacuum. Meaning, and what I mean in business by that, I have done business in some third world countries where there is not a moral underpinning, and if you like, if you sell your lawnmower to your neighbor, and he gets it before he gives you the money, you're not going to get the money. He's going to, because it's considered fine, or that he got, you were taken advantage of, and that's considered fine. You know, here in the United States, here if you and I make a business deal, if I agree to sell you my lawnmower for $100, you know the expectation is you give me $100, I give you the lawnmower. It was working when you got it. I mean that's just, we understand that, and everybody, that's just an underpinning of business. And without that, it doesn't work. I mean, you can't get a lawyer to do everything we do. We can't have lawyers following us around all the time.
Absolutely.
Mike, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Stephen Covey's son, Stephen M.R. Covey, wrote a book called The Speed of Trust. And in that book, he has a trust tree. And the very roots of that tree are integrity.
Right.
And without those roots, then the trust tree cannot grow. And the whole premise of the book talks about that the higher the trust level is, the faster business and interaction moves. If you trust me and you ask me to do something and you believe that I can and will do that, then you don't ask any questions, you don't do any research, you don't do any follow-up, you trust that it's going to get done.
You know, we have sort of a truism in business that anyone in business for a while will understand, but you should not do business with people you can't trust.
Absolutely.
There just aren't enough lawyers to deal with that. I mean, you just can't, you can't possibly catch every detail. If someone is trying or looking for ways to cheat you, there are going to be ways to be cheated. So, I mean, it just doesn't work. Michael, John Maxwell, and for that matter, many others, but they talk about levels of leadership. Now, you could put this, there's a lot of terms people use, but to stick with Maxwell for a moment, he says the lowest level on the leadership rung is positional leadership. In other words, I'm the leader because I'm the boss, and so that makes me the leader. And truthfully, for a lot of us, that's probably how we got our first leadership job. So it's not a bad thing necessarily.
Correct.
But there's how does one get to be a much better leader than simply a positional one? I mean, there are a lot better levels of leadership.
Well, more often than not, you are going to start with a position, and there's nothing wrong with that. We have to have positional leadership to simply start and gain people's trust is where you start, because you have that authority, and you're the person that's been assigned the ability to say, go and do this. These are the goals. These are the expectations. But that is the very foundational or the very beginning of leadership. And it's, you know, people follow you because they have to.
Right.
But in John Maxwell's book, The Five Levels of Leadership, from there, the next level is permission. People follow you because they want to, because you've proven yourself to be a capable leader, and they trust you. And the third level is people follow you because you produce results, because you get things done in an organization, and they see that, and they want to be a part of your success, and they want to mimic you, or they want to learn from you, from your production. And then the fourth level is people development. People want to follow you because you develop leaders, and they know that in following you that you're going to help them succeed and be better as well. And then that pinnacle level five leader in John's book is people follow you because of who you are and what you represent, that legacy leadership that all of us strive to reach to as we get older.
And, you know, that's not just at work. That can be at home. It can be in church. There are a lot of places to exercise leadership that don't necessarily have a title. And I always tell people that even if you can be a leader in your company and have no title at all. I mean, you can be the kind of person that people want to follow. And, you know, if you're being followed, you are a leader.
Absolutely.
And honestly, if you're not being followed, no matter what is in front of your name or behind your name, You're not one.
You're just going for a good walk.
That's exactly right. You're going for a stroll. You are listening to Driven to Business. We're streaming live on biz1190.com. We're heard every Saturday here on WAFS Biz 1190 AM here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We will be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Michael Bryant with LED Consulting. That's ledconsulting.net. We're also being podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Welcome back. Michael, what do you think about, this is a little bit off the wall, but what do you think about the increasing reliance that all of us have these days on communication technology as opposed to perhaps talking to each other face-to-face, as I could say back in the good old days?
Yeah, that's a great question. Today's technology provides us with the greatest opportunity to communicate information. But information is only a part of leading. And if we rely totally on the technology to communicate with those that we lead, we will fail miserably because the EQ side of leading is more important than ever because of this technology and because of the isolated world that we really live in. You know, you talk about in your neighborhood, you have neighbors all around you. I do. And we pull in from work. We hit the garage door button on our vehicle. The garage door opens up. We pull in that garage. We close the door behind us, and we don't see or interact with our neighbors at all. And so even though there's more information and more collaboration available to us, we really are isolating ourselves more and more because of the technology.
You know, you talked about learning things, that we learn things under stress in a hard way. This is one of the things I have learned the hard way, is that, you know, you'll give someone a memo or an email or a text, when you particularly if it's got a bit of a bite to it, when you should have gone to them face-to-face and dealt with it. And the results of that, at least in my experience, are rarely good because they don't see your facial expressions. They don't hear your heart, so to speak, when you're talking to them. They just see the criticism, and it's not taken well at all. It's not a good, you know, as a general rule, I think you should not criticize anyone over, you know, via email. That should be in person, if possible, on a telephone, if that's not possible, but not by email.
And you bring up a great point. No one can read our facial expressions or hear our heart through technology communication. And so it's critical when we're dealing with sensitive issues, when we're talking about developmental opportunities with someone that we lead, it's critical that we do it face-to-face or at least over the phone so that we talk and hear their side of it. And it goes back to that, you know, it's not the answers we provide, but the questions we ask.
Right.
And so when you're doing that, when you're talking about a sensitive issue, when somebody's not performing well, the startup of asking questions of where they are, how they got there, why they got there, many times we'll find out that the failure was on our side and not on their side because we didn't communicate expectations or we didn't give them all the tools they needed necessary to be successful and so on. So great point on the very need for us to make sure that in sensitive issues that we stay face-to-face with our people.
Right. Michael, tell us about you just a bit. Where were you raised and how did you get to be a career coach? That's an interesting career.
It's a wonderful career, Eddie. I love what I do. I was born and raised in Atlanta. I went to work at an early age for a Lowe's Home Improvement. Started out, as they were a southeastern regional building supply company and was part of their growth into a Fortune 100 retailer that it is today. And through that experience, I was because of their great benefits and retirements, I was able at close to my 30-year term to retire at a very early age. And from the time I left Lowe's, I began studying leadership. I'd been in leadership since I was in my early 20s and been leading people in some form or fashion most of my life, in not only in a professional but also in a private engagements and in my church. And but began studying leadership, looking for that next, going from success to significance that all of us do at my age. And how can I impact those around me? Went through a Robert Lewis men's study called Men's Fraternity.
I'm very familiar with that. That's a great study.
And the third year, you develop a life mission statement.
Right.
And obviously, I would recommend that people do that earlier than I did. But my life mission statement came out to be a godly influence to my family, the business community, and the body of Christ. And so as I took that life mission statement, how can I apply that in what I'm doing moving forward? And settled on being an executive coach and doing leadership development programs. I was introduced to Dr. Jim Smith, who's the president of Leadership Systems. He has a great coaching model that I fell in love with. He based it off the fact that Jesus asked over 300 questions are recorded in the Gospels in the New Testament. And if Jesus, who knew everything, asked that many questions, then obviously we should do the same. So I use a Socratic model of asking questions in our coaching scenarios and drawing out answers from those that we are engaged with in an executive coaching form.
Michael, when I was younger, my career is in small business. I was fortunate to go to work for two Texas entrepreneurs out there in a small company and be with them when they grew it to a pretty large company, not a Fortune 100 by any means, and kind of grew with that. When I was younger, very much wanted to be successful, and I set a lot of career goals, and most of them were measured by money. But as I got older, I began to figure out that money alone is an unworthy goal. So talk to us about setting worthy goals. What do you tell people?
Well, you did like most of us. You know, in our 20s, Eddie, all we want to do is survive. So money is critical. We're just trying to figure out how we're going to pay the rent and pay the utilities and buy groceries and those type of things. So early on, you know, money needs to be a part of those grow goals. But as we grow and as we develop and as we mature, worthy goals need to be long-lasting goals. You know, we want to start looking for what's that legacy that we want to leave? How can we impact those around us? And goals that are bigger than us and have a more global or more communal type goal that impacts not only ourselves and our immediate families, but a much larger scale. What can I do that will impact those around me, and what's the legacy that I want to leave?
That's a great thing for anyone, particularly a young person starting out in a business, to remember, is that life is not going to be measured really at the end of it by your business success. It's going to be measured by your legacy, as you put it, or probably measured more by relationships than by anything else. Michael, what do you hope to be remembered for?
Well, it goes back to my life mission statement, Eddie. I hope that I will be remembered as someone that was a godly influence first to my family, then to the business community and the body of Christ, and helping people be better, whether it's professionally, privately, personally, in a family environment, or even in their spiritual lives. Those are my goals. That's my ambition. That's what I get up every day for.
Those are actually great goals, and I think something worthy of every one of us as we get older in business. And I'm not saying you're old or I am. Neither of us are admitting to that just yet. But but no one's mistaken me for a young person recently either. I have to admit that. So we can get there. Michael, real quick, we have about a minute. Is there anything you would do differently in your career?
Oh, there are many things that I could probably do better. Probably the biggest mistake I made in my career and in my professional life was that gap, and we talked about it earlier, when I stopped investing in myself and was so focused on those around me and pouring into them that I just ran out of gas. I ran out of fuel. I could no longer pull people forward because I had not been feeding myself. And it's the old adage of, you know, we've all, when we get in an airplane, we have to go through those safety spiels. And what does the airline steward or stewardess tell us that when that oxygen mask drops down in an emergency, what's the first thing you do?
Put it on yourself first.
Put it on yourself first because you can't save somebody else if you're dead. So that focus, I heard one time that Jack Welch said that he spent 50% of his time on himself.
Well, I do like Jack Welch, and I like you. Michael, thank you so much for being our guest today. We're out of time, and you've been a great guest. Hope to have you back.
Thank you very much, Eddie. I appreciate the honor and privilege to be a part of your show.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield, heard every Saturday at 11 a.m. right here. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.